It's that time again on a Friday when AM Live presents another update from the Coalface with Martin Creamer, publishing editor of Engineering News and Mining Weekly. A very good morning, Martin. Thanks for joining us once again here on AM Live.
Thanks, Gillian.
Now, we see that researchers are developing robots to improve safety in underground mines. Tell us, that sounds quite interesting.
Yes, this is the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research. That is the state-owned research body, South Africa's own body. And they've gone in to do research into field robots. Now, these are not going to be the robots that you see in the factories being pick and place and welding robots. These are robots that move around. They've got mobility, and there's been a lot of investment in these around the world for defense reasons. So we might as well ride on the back of that big investment and try and do something special in South Africa for underground mines, because most of these have been used in defense situations for hazard removal, and of course they're on surface, so they can use GPS and global positioning systems. You can't do that underground. So they're going to have to be far different intelligent methods used. So the South Africans realize that in our mining, there's a cycle. It's drill, blast, and clean. And in between that blast and clean cycle, you need to inspect to see that, what they call the hanging wall, the rock roof is not going to cave in on you. And that's quite a dangerous situation. So they want to send these little robots in that will be able to climb over rubble and operate in narrow passages. But there isn't much there to distinguish, from. There are no beacons underground. So this is going to be quite a challenge on how they use the radio frequency identification with simultaneous localization and mapping to actually be able to guide and allow these robots to go in to do the inspection and then to produce a risk map so that you can save lives, because we lost 178 people, in mines, or 128, sorry, that's overstating, 128 people in our mines last year.
Any ideas to where the funding is going to be coming
from?
Well,
this is just normal researching that is being done by the CSIR, but of course, once you get this right, there's going to be a demand for this, even though some of the mines like AngloGold Ashanti are saying, look, we're going to move away from blasting altogether. So there are different trends in the technology spectrum. But this is one that could serve a lot of people, because this whole issue of drill, blast, clean is what most people use.
While we're on that topic of mining, I hear that De Beers is going all out to create thousands of non-mining jobs. What does that entail?
This is very interesting. Down in the Namaqualand area, there's been a howl of protest with the withdrawal of De Beers from another diamond mine. And Transhex are waiting to move in. So that's another issue with the state. The Section 11 transfer of ownership should be far faster so that, you can allow the new owner to move in. But be that as it may, in the interim, you can see De Beers going all out to do the creation of non-mining jobs. And they've got a target of 5,000 jobs in 5 years. And they created this enterprise development hub in August. And already they've left several enterprises with 14 million rands worth of loans, and 400 jobs have been created already. They're also going to create 500 artisans down there, and they're doing a lot of artisan training also in Kimberley. But what really impressed me was the new diamonds down there. Because of this infrastructure where they used to draw in the water from the sea for their diamond processing, you now see them drawing in that water and putting it into the pits where they've mined out the diamonds and growing abalone. And, the price of abalone is a very good one at the moment. And so you see their BE partner, De Beers BE partner, Ponahale, with the fish company, Irvin & Johnson, I&J, moving in on an initial 40 million rand abalone project, and they're thinking that this could really have big potential. And then the oyster farm that they've got there, also very impressive. But another aspect is what's happening with wind energy in that area. So although De Beers have got this enormous amount of land there, they're offering the farms to various producers of wind energy, three of them independent, but also Eskom. And it looks like there are going to be billions of rands worth of wind farms there. When you go around, you can see the masts and they're doing the tests. And another important aspect is that when De Beers goes into this mariculture, it's not going to diversify. In other words, De Beers is not going to be producing abalone. They are just warehousing those shares. And the moment there's a dividend flow and a cash flow, they will then create a community trust so that money can go into the community.
Still interesting to think, though, that seafood and mining can go hand in hand.
And especially with the same infrastructure.
Yes. Okay. Well, moving on, South Africa's Carbon Capture and Storage Centre. There's apparently some developments happening there.
Yes. You know, carbon capture and storage, we've got this curse of carbon buildup in South Africa. We use so much coal. I mean, 90% of our electricity comes from coal. 30% of our transport fuel and petrol and diesel comes from coal. And so, and a lot of our steel comes from coal. So if you've got this obligation to really clean up the Coal Act. But of course, we were working in tandem with the world. The world has sort of gone to sleep on this. You know, there was such a lot of urgency in getting the carbon capture and storage effort underway. But we see now the world is more worried about sovereign debt and countries going bust. So I think they're putting this on a bit of a back burner. In the meantime, South Africa is going ahead with its plans and hasn't changed its schedule. And it's got our carbon capture and storage center. And they're planning, they've just finished a scoping study, or they're just finishing a scoping study, which will result in the first test injection. Now, this sounds horrific. You know, they're going to inject the carbon that they capture into the ground. And you think, well, where are they going to do this? They're finding some sites in KwaZulu-Natal and Eastern Cape. But, you know, that's horrific because that's going to be a long distance. It's going to be a costly exercise to pipe that carbon out. And one would say, where's the business case here? Hopefully, they'll be able to do something with that captured carbon dioxide. You know, the Europeans say, no, there's nothing you can do with this. You're just going to leave it in the ground. And it is a technique that's been used in the production of oil because they use the gas to inject into these big cavities to lift the level of the oil. But what are we going to do with it? Yeah, you know, all we look for is hard rock to put the... And so there has been talk that perhaps we could turn that carbon dioxide into fuel. That would be fantastic. And, you know, Sasol is studying this using algaic forms of generating fuel from this, but it's still a long shot. So it still looks like a very big cost at the moment and also a big time frame. The first test injection, only 2016, scoping study just being completed. And then I'm sure the demo plant would only come after there are others in the world, because South Africa, although we use a lot of coal, I mean, we shouldn't be leading this show. You know, the rest of the world should be doing it, and they seem to have fallen asleep at the wheel.
Well, God willing, you can give us an update in 5 years' time on what happens in 2016. Martin, thanks for joining us here on AM Live. Martin Creamer is publishing editor of Engineering News and Mining Weekly. He'll be back at the Coalface at the same time next Friday.